You'll remember there was some talk a little while ago about Connecticut housing unaccompanied migrant children at the southern border, but now the Biden administration has decided to nix the idea. Governor Ned Lamont says he was ready to offer a former state detention facility in Middletown.
The White House said, let's take a pause. I think we're taking care of these kids elsewhere right now, but we really appreciate the heart of the state of Connecticut to reach out and give us some options.
Advocacy groups and local officials had criticized the idea. They said a former jail was not the best place to house migrant children.
You're listening to C19, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut, New York region.
Coming up, New Haven will host an anonymous gun buyback program tomorrow. A new survey says people don't really want to use public transit anymore. And did you know America's first cookbook was published right here in our region?
I'm Bill Buckner.
And I'm Sabrina Garone.
Anyone looking to surrender guns anonymously will be able to drop them off without leaving their vehicle at New Haven Police Academy tomorrow. WSHU's Cassandra Basler reports the buyback comes after a nearly 50% uptick in gun violence during the pandemic.
The gun buyback program runs from 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. It'll incorporate COVID-19 precautions, so those participating can drive up and drop off the guns, no questions asked. New Haven Police Department will offer gift cards while supplies last. They range from $10 to $150, depending on the style of the gun. That includes everything from BB guns to assault-style weapons. Guns must be delivered unloaded and in clear plastic bags. Any ammunition must be in a separate bag. The person dropping off the gun will not be charged with illegal possession of that specific firearm. Cassandra Basler, WSHU News.
A recent survey reveals the Metropolitan Transportation Authority will face a rough road to recovery.
Less than 15% of commuters intend to use mass transit more after the pandemic. Sean Gribben has details.
Nearly 75% of the 33,000 people surveyed say the fear of crime, harassment, and for health safety keeps them away. Officials warn this could lead to disastrous consequences for the MTA. The federal government has sent the MTA $12 billion in coronavirus relief since last March, but they need another $4 billion to keep things running by 2024. The authority plans to cover 38% of its annual expenses with transit fares. It is now estimated that the MTA will only receive enough fare revenue to cover 10% of its expenses. Sean Gribben, WSHU News.
Coming up, more on a piece of culinary history located right here in our region. But first, some headlines and a message from C19's supporter.
Support for C19 comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
Looking to get the COVID vaccine in our region? Here's the latest on how you can do that.
All residents in our region over 16 are eligible for the vaccine.
Connecticut residents, you can schedule an appointment by visiting ct.gov/COVID vaccine or call 877-918-2224. New Yorkers, you can schedule an appointment using the Am I Eligible app or by calling 833-697-4829.
A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by New Haven restaurant owners who claimed that Governor Ned Lamont's executive orders violated their constitutional rights. The owners of the 50s Lounge argued that Lamont's executive orders that restricted restaurant capacity during the pandemic had unjustly prevented them from earning a living. U.S. District Judge Michael Shea said in his ruling that the owners failed to show how the orders violated their constitutional rights. The owners of the 50s Lounge also brought claims against New Haven Mayor Justin Elliker, but that was also dismissed by Shea. The city had temporarily shut down the restaurant last June for violating state COVID-19 guidelines. State lawmakers from across Long Island say they want a fully public power authority. That could happen if a regional utility contract is terminated over fallout from Tropical Storm Isaias last summer. The 14 lawmakers wrote to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this week. They say the public-private arrangement that Long Island Power Authority has relied on for decades now doesn't work anymore, and the public option will be cheaper and more reliable. PSEG Long Island has said it wants to stay on as the region's service provider and has been working to regain customers' trust after 500,000 lost power during Isaias, some for more than a week. LIPA's board members have been weighing the public option and others since last year. They could make a decision this month after missing their deadline in March. The tradition of American cooking can trace its origin to a single cookbook, published less than a decade after the U.S. Constitution. It was the first to present recipes of the New World instead of just copying English and French dishes. It's called American Cookery. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports as part of his podcast, Off the Path.
As far as we know, there's fewer than a dozen first editions of American Cookery that still exist.
So I have in front of me two copies, both printed in 1796.
Eileen Frank is a curator with the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford.
Yeah, so the full title is American Cookery, or The Art of Dressing Viands, Fish, Poultry, and Vegetables, and the Best Modes of Making Pastes, Puffs, Pies, Tarts, Puddings, Custards, and Preserves, and all kinds of cakes, from the imperial plum to plain cake, adapted to this country and all grades of life.
American Cookery, we'll stick with the short version, was first published in Hartford. That's how the museum lucked out to get these copies. Eileen holds up one copy and flips through the pages. It's simple, faded paper, held together by thread and ragged around the edges.
While it is in good condition for something that old, you know, it's been around the block a few times. So the 40-some pages that make up this book, now the paper is a yellow-brown. There are beautiful stain marks indicating that it was actually used.
The museum once brought in a food historian who was able to identify those stains as egg whites.
And I actually like that it is a little beaten and battered around the edges because it shows that whoever owned this version actually used it. It really was popular, and housewives and domestic laborers used this for their recipes.
The author, Amelia Simmons, may have been a housewife or a domestic laborer herself. We don't know for sure.
We know very little about this woman who really changed the face of American cooking. The title page identifies her as an American orphan. And she does, in the opening pages, talk about the plight of women who don't have family.
An orphaned young American woman could well have found work as a live-in cook. If that's what Amelia Simmons did, she knew her way around a kitchen. Eileen Frank says the average early American kitchen could be chaotic.
It would have been a very hot place. It would have been an open hearth fireplace, large cast iron pots and pans, a Dutch oven to do your baking in, the noises that come along with cooking, the temperature, the smells that go along with cooking where you don't have refrigeration. I mean, you're not slaughtering an entire cow in your kitchen, but you're breaking down meat into smaller portions. You're taking out the intestines of fish, dealing with some pretty smelly parts of cooking.
Most Americans still relied on English and French recipes of meat pies and stewed vegetables. But this cookbook went local, inspired by some indigenous staples like squash and corn, and used terms like Indian meal and Indian pudding. And it incorporated another local New England favorite.
It's one of the first cookbooks to mention serving cranberry with your turkey. So if you love that tradition at Thanksgiving or other holidays, you might want to thank Amelia Simmons for documenting it and getting us all to enjoy some cranberry.
And pumpkin pie. And it's believed to be the first appearance in print of a certain beloved baked good, the cookie. The English versions are called biscuits. It's believed the word cookie came from a Dutch word, probably out of the Dutch settlements around the Hudson River. I decided to try the first ever published cookie recipe myself with the help of my partner, Shay Barisi, in our very non-historic kitchen.
Let's boil some water.
We picked Amelia Simmons' gingerbread cookie recipe. We found it online. The whole book has been digitized. Read the directions.
Okay. 1 pound sugar boiled slowly in half pint water. Scum well and cool.
Did that?
Add 2 teaspoons pearl ash dissolved in milk.
Pearl ash is an old-timey leavening agent made from potassium carbonate. It's another ingredient that made its debut in the cookbook. We sub in baking soda.
Then 2.5 pounds flour, rub in 4 ounces butter, and 2 large spoons of finely powdered coriander seed.
And 1 quart of molasses.
I just have to be real with you. This is a lot of molasses.
Do you think we should cut back on some of the molasses?
I mean, that wouldn't be in the spirit of following the recipe. But even when I make things with molasses, usually a jar lasts me a year. So this is 2 years worth of molasses in one recipe.
American cookery sometimes calls for wild proportions. But also there was like one recipe that had a certain, there are a lot of eggs in some of these.
Like so many eggs.
I think 21?
I think even more than that. I think there was a 29-egg recipe. Again, we're not clear on how many servings are supposed to be in these, and I'm taking a gamble that this number of servings are consistent.
Okay, let's do it. We mix together flour, sugar, and the 2 years' worth of molasses. I grate some nutmeg. We toss in the spices. As Shay stirs the mixture, it starts to get thick.
I'm kneading by hand just a mass of what looks like concrete and is about as heavy. We added a little bit of water so that the dough would come together. And now it is officially too heavy to mix with a spoon. It smells rather therapeutically gingerbready at this point, which is a good sign. The recipe claims that the more you knead it, the lighter and whiter it will be, which is a strange way to describe a brown cookie.
Are you about to put it in the oven?
Yes.
Excellent.
We put the first batch in for 15 minutes. We have to guess on the temperature, since the recipe doesn't say. The kitchen fills with the smell of gingerbread and molasses. I'm expecting something thick and tough, like hardtack. When we take it out and taste it, it's not at all what I expected.
So this is warm gingerbread. It is more cakey than I thought it would be. It's more light and wholesome than I would have thought.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's not too heavy. I thought it would be. I think it would be filling if you ate a lot of it, but it's not overly sweet. It's not leaden like I thought it would be.
The cookies lasted us for the rest of the week. No way to know if Amelia Simmons would be proud, but the rest of our quarantine pod loved them. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan, discovering the old and the new on the road from New York to Boston.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org. C19 is supported by Hartford HealthCare.
As always, you can send us your thoughts and story ideas to news at WSHU.org. We'd love to hear from you.
I'm Bill Buckner.
And I'm Sabrina Garone. We'll talk tomorrow.